Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of that certain age, it is that time. It is the end. It is the boys. With me and Sam, it's the finale. It's here. It's What I Know, the title, which I don't know if we're going to go through the title or not, but this one kind of throws me for a loop. Sam, it's here. We did it.
Well,
what you know?
All I know is that I'm bummed. I feel like we just got started and it's already over. And who knows when season 3 is coming out because of all the, you know, 2020/2021 uncertainty.
I know.
What a good season. I mean, I almost felt like it could have been like they were kind of half planning that they weren't going to get a third season and this could have been a finale.
Yeah, indeed. I you know, there's a lot of speculation out there that I think when this initially fell that, okay, this is going to be it. Because, you know, with everything going on, you know, it just kind of, there's no promises anymore. But season 3 is in the writing phase. So good.
Yeah. I mean, even look at something like Glow. I mean, Glow had gotten renewed for their last season. They shot the first episode already. And because they don't know when they can get everyone together and they had to release people out of contracts, they canceled it. So, you know, I was glad this got an early season 3 renewal and they really seem to have that 5-season plan. And, you know, I'm happy it's going to keep going. But if this was the last one, I was like, oh, that was pretty good little finish too. But I still got plenty of questions. That's for sure.
Well, it's interesting. We delayed doing this episode a little bit. We had just scheduling and all kinds of, you know, fun stuff. And then lo and behold, yesterday, the Biffites do a little post talking about stuff that they've been watching, stuff that they absolutely have not been watching. And I realized that, you know, this show really, it's either you're either down with it or you're not. And, you know, don't give those guys a hard time, please, that, you know, they didn't want to do or talk about the boys or don't like it, whatever. Leave them be. They have their likes and dislikes, just like you do. So no hard feelings there. But that's why, Sam, you and I are here. And when I like to cover the more, you know, kind of, I enjoy the ultraviolent stuff, not for ultraviolent sake, but to see how it's handled. And boy, this one isn't as bloody a mess as some in the past, but it certainly is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I don't mind. I think it's funny to like shows that have violence in them and then be mad when they're too violent. I don't quite understand that because I'm a big believer in show me what it really looks like. You know, like I would say probably one of my issues with some of the shows, even this one a little bit, you know, they tried to get into the whole race thing and racism. And I feel like they slow played it so much that I'm just like, okay, if this lady's really trying to make 1,000-person superhero army for white people, you really waited till the end to really let us know. Like, you know, I feel like sugarcoating racism and violence doesn't make it better. It just makes it more tolerable. So why do it? You know, yeah. It's like, lean in and show the ugliness of it and show that it's bad. Like I don't get the trying to slow play. You know, much like I complained about Umbrella Academy this year, that they had a really awkward racism subplot where the white people were being far too nice. Yeah. I was like, that's not how this works. So,
well, I'd
rather see that. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking, you know, as we break down the episode, even like, I'll just go ahead and take this, like essentially Huey and Start like get the document held by the Church of the Collective that basically is the docs on Stormfront. And it's only until the memes and animations are and outwardly completely open that she was, you know, essentially part of the Third Reich or part of, you know, Nazi experiments and is outwardly called a Nazi. And, you know, that word has gotten so watered down where I think this is where I start to get a little bit agitated is that, you know, violence, you know, puts a good exclamation point on things, but when there's so much of it that it becomes a period, that's a problem. It's the same way with words and things. When you say certain things, it should have it. That should be the exclamation point. It shouldn't be the commonplace, but it's only in this world of the boys they have to actually outwardly say it, you know, on the news in order for everybody to like actually turn on Stormfront, which I thought was kind of interesting, maybe a mirror of the times. I'm not really sure, but you know, it kind of shows like how the story inside the story, the meta, has to happen.
Yeah, I think it 100% is a mirror of the times, because think about it. Everybody turns on Stormfronts the minute they hear the word Nazi.
Yeah.
But yet she uses all the language, all the coded, you know, the words, all of the things. And it's kind of like now. I mean, I feel like people are, it's very easy to say, oh, I denounce white supremacy. Well, for some of us, it's easy to say.
Sure.
It's very easy to say that. But then when you see the actions of people who maybe believe that and code their language, it doesn't get the amount of hate as opposed to if somebody has a swastika tattooed on their chest. And right. I feel like that's one of the things we've lost, that nuance of being able to look at somebody and being like, they seem to really have the same goals as these bad people. I wonder, you know, and if someone's called a Nazi, it's easy to be like, oh, well, that's bad. They should be gone.
And in some ways, Stormfront is the most reasonable voice. And don't get it this twisted around, please. But you know, she even outwardly says in her final scenes, quotation mark, that you know, it's that people don't I forget how she says it, but it's basically to the effect of they just don't like the word. They're doing it already, but they just don't want to be known for that. And yeah, everything is a guise.
Mm-hmm. Like, people just don't like the word Nazi is what she said. People right. love what I have to say. Yeah, no, that was
exactly good... That's what it is. They love what I have to say, they just don't like the word.
Yeah, and so it's kind of like things are now. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff being tolerated that you scratch your head, you know, very much like one of my favorite little pieces of acting in this episode is when she's telling Ryan about white genocide, and Homelander kind of gives that like, what?
Yeah, like, wait,
where did this took a turn? Like he did, like he hasn't noticed where she was going with this whole time. He's like, why are we worried about this?
You know, it's funny because Homelander, I think there's a lot of good stuff in the finale. All right, let me front load this real quick. I thought the finale had some issues. I thought it had some pacing problems that I was having trouble getting through. Mm-hmm. However, again, like other episodes, there are these great self-contained moments where Homelander starts to learn how to be a father and how to care, because quite honestly, when Homelander's talking to his son, you almost feel like he was an alien. You know, while he was not, you know, from Krypton, you know, his basically his analog of Superman. He didn't know how to fly. He had to learn all these things by himself. He also has to kind of learn how emotions work and how the regular unsuper people function. And I think it's really interesting. Those really almost kind of, I want to say sensitive moments, but like ones that actually I felt something for Homelander. And even when Stormfront came in and was helping as a surrogate mother, you know, kind of happened last episode, but this one a lot more, like, you know, you can't be afraid of this little boy. And it was just, you know, really a great moment.
Yeah, and you know what I thought was funny is that as this episode went on, I really felt like this again brought out some of the humanity in Homelander.
Yep.
To where you're like, he cares about this kid. This is his son. He actually does love him. When they bring him to Planet Vought and he freaks out, he immediately is like, excuse me. He didn't even care about kind of being rude to people, whereas usually he would stop and take a selfie with everybody. Yep. He was like, I just need to get my son out of here. He understood, you know, it was one of those things where he finally had kind of a shared experience with somebody. Cause yep. he saw him freak out around a lot of people. And he's like, I freaked out too. He's like, I cried. And he's like, and it's kind of, it's like, it brings the humanity out of, even when he kills all of the Vought people. It's because he's like, these people are here to take away my son, and I am not going to let that happen. And it just kind of goes to where, you know, I hate to overpraise the show because it is goofy.
I totally agree. it's like that's the last thing I want to do, but I struggle because I only want to talk about shows that I like, and I hate to pick apart, and there are going to be some picking apart, but like, it really does do quite well.
Yeah, no, it just gives you I feel like it leans into that, this overall theory that nobody's all good or all bad. Yeah. And that you have to realize that people are these messes of grays that walk around, and most of us are trying to be light gray or white, but you know, sometimes some of us have a little more black in our lives, and it's not necessarily all our fault, but you know, your actions are your fault, but maybe the way you got there isn't, type of thing. And so I just, that's the thing I like about this show, is that you think A-Train's a one note character, and then he ends up, you know, doing a little bit more. You get to see Annie have a crisis of faith this season. And it's just things I feel like other shows wouldn't lean into as much. It would be, you know, maybe a line they say in a show, whereas this is a plot point, and it just makes everybody's a character. There's no one note kind of garbage time on this show. Although, you know, like you said, there are things about the show that are silly. I mean, the fact they can just waltz in and out of Vought Tower these days is kind of silly. You know? But at the same point, I don't need like a code hacking, we broke into the thing to talk to Maeve. They should have just met somewhere or something. But at the same time, I just, you know, I kind of don't mind that as much. I feel like it's like, okay, they've shown that you can. And then I feel like sometimes it's also showing that it's like places, reputation aren't always what they seem. You know, kind of thing where it's like, oh, you can't get into Vought Tower. Well, look, co-eds could get in there to go hook up a Lamplighter. So it's obviously not the hardest place in the world if you know what you're doing, type of thing, if you got a man on the inside.
Yeah. What was interesting about this episode is like, I think two characters I didn't really care about, got a little bit more insight. I do have a little nitpick issue with A-Train because I think they expand him out a little bit. Number one, he doesn't seem to have heart attacks anymore, and he is faster than light. There's a lot of situations where he is going in and out of cars or inside of a room, and it just blows a little bit of air around. And I don't understand where that came from. That threw me because it's like almost like A-Train has even more powers than he did before. He can literally kind of almost teleport.
Yeah. I mean, I look at it as it's just, he's running so fast and opens the car door so fast that you don't see it, type of thing. I thought that was a great thing. He's like, what's up, losers? And he scares the shit out of them.
Yeah.
It seems like they've dropped the whole heart attack angle, or part of it makes me think that maybe he's saving his speed a little bit. Like he does it to get in the car, but when he's maybe searching for him throughout the burrows, he's running at half speed, just trying to find him, type of thing.
Yeah.
My fake out moment was when Mr. Edgar is meeting with the head of the Church of the Collective. And you see the napkin blow by.
Absolutely.
You texted me that. They all, that napkin. And my initial thought was, oh man, Mr. Edgar's the one blowing up people's brains because he can control stuff with his mind.
Yeah, it's like psychokinesis. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then when the scene got over, I was like, oh, that was just A-Train sneaking into the room to listen to what they were talking about. You know, I realized, which, yeah, it seems like they've dropped the whole heart attack thing, but you know, maybe that's just something they want to explore in season three.
Yeah. And the other one was Maeve. And boy, Maeve was there. I mean, you don't see a whole lot of bad side to Maeve. I thought she was like, she's the analog to Wonder Woman, but she is really on a complete other spectrum. The way in which she was talking to Huey and Starlight, it was just, I mean, she was just nasty.
Yeah, it was ugly. And it's just, I think it's one of those things where I think that she was a lot like Starlight when she joined, and now she's been beaten up and she's jaded. And she's you know, she's been through hell. She's got that 1,000-yard stare where she's seen some shit. and she's just not, you know, it's like she doesn't have time for this. We can take them down kind of thing. It's like, look, I've tried. I've been beaten up. I've lost the love of my life because I tried to find this tape. And, you know, nothing's gone right since I've joined the Seven, except that I'm rich and famous. So, you know, sit in your rich and famous apartment and do all the drugs you want and leave me alone, because that's the best you can get out of this life. And it's just like, oof, that's dark.
Yeah. And Butcher did not do what I thought he would do, you know, having the proverbial secret weapon or the overpowered weapon, like all bets are off, I'm going in. Instead, it becomes kind of a cool little machination with he and Edgar, which I wasn't expecting in the least. But, you know, you put two good actors together at a table and amazing things can happen. And I was just so enamored that, and also heartbroken and angry that, but I understood that for Butcher, Rebecca's son is really a symbol of her attack, and he loves her, and he's not even at the point of really accepting him. In fact, he's going to sell him out and to get Becca back for good. And Vought can have the secret weapon. The only weapon that we predicted is Homelander's son is the only thing that really is going to be able to kill him.
Yeah, he's so powerful. I don't see what could stop him at this point. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's the, I don't know, the end game. I don't know how important he'll be to the series going forward. I was kind of bummed that Butcher didn't just raise him. I thought that might be what was going to happen, but it makes a little bit more sense, you know, that somebody else does. And I wonder if we'll be checking in on him or what kind of, cause I did like that very sad kind of relationship they had towards the end where he's giving him Becca's necklace.
And the same Christopher Metal. Yeah.
It was very touching where you're just like, here's this guy that was, you know, ready to kind of screw over his wife and separate her from her only child. And instead he's doing the right thing and really being more of the Butcher, that the reason we like him, not as much of an, you know, well, just a sprinkle of asshole, not the whole thing.
Yeah. And he wasn't allowed to make that choice. The choice was made for him in a sense, you know. Stormfront, gets Becca does she have a knife to her throat? I can't remember exactly how that played out, but,
No, Becca stabs her in the eye.
That's right. Okay.
And then she's choking her. And much like she choked Kimiko's brother, she was she wanted to slow choke her. And so she's like, I like watching the light go out. And that's
so, Billy's choices become neutralized because essentially Stormfront makes the choice for him. And essentially her son, while trying to defend his mom, like rips Stormfront apart. And I guess the knife inadvertently slices her throat, Becca's throat, and she dies. So it was also weird. Like, I was kind of surprised that her son didn't come to her. I know it was all kind of played to, you know, Butcher has to feel this, but I don't know. It was strange.
Well, I just think that I thought that was a typical kid reaction where you fuck up and you freeze and you're just crying and saying you're sorry, hoping that it'll be better. Like, I get that he didn't. I would have made sense that they both ran to her, but I think that Butcher maybe recognized the immediacy of like, oh my God,
we've
got seconds before she bleeds out. And meanwhile, he's just seeing his mom bleeding, being like, I'm sorry. Like, I thought that worked for me. And such a sad scene of watching him, you know, watch her pass away. You know, it was interesting because he kind of gets up with a tire iron or a crowbar.
Yeah.
And you think for a second that he's going to go over there and just murder Ryan.
Yeah.
And he doesn't, which I guess that's what happens in the comic books. I guess.
Oh,
In the comic books, what really happens is Becca gets pregnant. He knows about it and the baby is born early and kills her and pops out of her belly, like in their bed. And then he has to kill the baby in like their bedroom. Like that's what happened. Geez. So I read that afterwards. And a lot of people were like, ooh, we thought he was going down the comic book route. And then Homelander showed up and he protected him. And he was like, oh, that's a good change. You know, I like that.
Yeah. It was interesting. Apparently if I'm reading it correctly, Tony Sindelar actually had made a comment that said that he actually, I think it sounded like he liked the way in which the story was portrayed on TV rather than the comic material, the source material. He said it was a little bit, I infer that it was a little bit weaker than what they've done with the show.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons I haven't been tempted to go back and read the comics.
Yeah.
Is because everybody seems to be just a dumber version of what we've seen on the show.
Yeah.
Or a more simplistic version. So I'm just kind of like, okay. And so I kind of like just reading about like, or watching YouTube videos and seeing like, oh, well, in the comics, this is what happened. So like, I've got
almost everybody has their moment.
And I've got a couple of those lined up too. Some interesting stuff for next season too. I did a little research for today's episode.
Oh, nice.
Let's go through here. I want to go through a couple of little things. We finally found out why Huey likes Billy Joel.
Yep.
That was interesting. And then just, you know, seeing that he's got, you know, it's funny because they never did mention his mom. And I wonder if that's going to be important going forward as to why she left. I mean,
100%. You
know, there's got to be something with Vaught there too. they've got other fingers in all the pies. I love that Mr. Edgar was the first person we see decline a Fresca. He calls it awful stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting. He said Stormfront has problems with him, and at the moment I have to indulge her. And I wonder why. Is it really just that he is this almighty, it's all about the dollar, so he doesn't care that Stormfront hates him as a person? You know, because he has that thing with Butcher that it's all about stock price.
It's business. It's not show friends, it's show business.
Yeah. So I wonder, that kind of amazed me that I was like, wow, he really is a ruthless businessman. If he's willing to empower a Nazi to, you know, make his company stock price go up a quarter of a point. Yeah.
Desperate times, desperate measures.
Yeah. I thought that taking Ryan to Planet Vaught was so dumb. It's like, oh yeah, first time in public. Let's go to this place where I'm on the menu and everybody's going to come ask for my autograph.
But we know why that had to happen.
He's trying to show off, you know,
and Homelander also had to like basically prove the point of what would happen if put yourself in isolation too long. And when you have to go to the real world, it becomes daunting and you can't get your head around it.
Oh, totally. Totally. So it's just one of those things where I was just like, he's so dumb. But it's like, at the same time, you know, you got to see that he actually did care about him. Like while he was using that to pump himself up and look cool in front of everybody and probably even get some footage out there that he's there with his son. He, you know, inadvertently freaked him out and, you know, made up for his mistake and got him out of there. I was kind of bummed. I had a note here, kind of bummed that we didn't get any Simon Pegg this season. You know, we got to see everybody reunite with everyone. It would have been nice to see Huey go check on his dad.
Yeah. I'm a little baffled by that because I think in my mind it became that his father was dead, but he's not, right?
No, I don't think so. I mean, from what I got, the last time we saw his dad was when A-Train was threatening him. And then Kimiko came and saved him. And then they were all... Because, like, he was in the same place that Mother's Milk's family was, and they're safe. So I...
Okay, so that makes sense. We could see Simon Pegg next season with Huey's mom.
Yeah. Oh, here, I have a couple of notes from Edgar and Butcher's meeting here. One was that his lime water seemed very deliberate. They kept showing like the squeezing of the lime and the pouring of the water. And I didn't quite understand why that was. I was like, you know, because listening to The Incomparable enough has taught me every frame matters. And so when you're going through and you're showing me their water three different times and, you know, they made a point of him not drinking a Fresca, I was like, that's interesting too.
I think that there's something with the tea ceremony of that, you know, like it's like, I think of the other guys with the cucumber water and in like the talking about it, like the Russian water, it's like this, you know, everything's special about it. And when I put all the ingredients together and take care of it, it gives me enjoyment. I don't think that there's anything like directly about limes or that, but
maybe he's just very specific kind of thing that it's like,
well, it's like, why would I want a Fresco when I can make my own lime type drink?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
And then I thought I wrote down the best stuff he said there. It's not ruthless. It's prices per share. He said, I can't lash out some raging entitled maniac. That's a white man's privilege.
Oh, I didn't even catch that.
Woo. Yeah. And I was like, ooh. And I was like, pick your poison as to what you want that to refer to right now.
Yeah, Knives Out.
And then the best thing is once Butcher came up with the plan, he's like, what about, he's like, you tell him the only way to keep him safe is to keep her away. He'll do anything to keep her alive, or she'll keep do anything to keep him alive. And he goes, and you call me a ruthless bastard.
Yeah. Yeah. I did really like the moment with, and you can find the translation online, but when Stormfront, seems to be dying, she's burnt up and mostly limbless, which I will speculate, you know, Homelander says she's in custody. I would assume that we're going to see some part of her next season. It may not be the whole season, but I think we're going to see some sort of, I don't know about cyborgy stuff, but the most important thing is this thing where she is speaking in German and she's talking about a moment that she had with her child and husband, Frederick. And it was just about a moment at the apple or the orchard or something like that.
Which, again, going back to showing that, you know, not everyone's the worst person in the world. They're just, you know, they can be misguided and have poor intentions. But it's like at the end of the day, what's her favorite memory is hanging out with her kid and her husband underneath an apple tree. It's like everybody really just wants a little peace and, you know, love at the end of the day. And just they have different ways of going about that. And sometimes it's terrible and sometimes it's good.
Yeah.
Did you get it all surprised? So since we're talking about kind of the end, I thought it was weird when Storm called everything lies and deep fakes. I was like, does she just assume there's a camera on her at all time? Or like,
yeah, I don't know. That just, I think that was shoehorned verbiage.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't feel like that really,
or it's just kind of, you know, we see that now where everybody just kind of, if they don't believe in something, they just call it fake news. And so maybe it's just a comment on the way, you know, truth is portrayed now, that you just go, hey, look, if you just tell everybody it's fake and you don't stop, you know, enough people will probably believe you.
Yeah. Speaking of fake arenos. Okay. Again, I'm a stickler on powers. It just, you have to show me certain things, but when you show me something different, we find out the senator is the one who's been popping heads, and she's popped the head of the Church of the Collective. So no more him, which is strange. And her eyes seem to go white when she's doing head poppings. Now, we saw the scene where she was basically in charge of popping all heads in that Senate hearing, which was strange. And at no time did her eyes go white or there was any kind of indication that she was the one doing it.
Yeah. The one thing that I went back and watched it, because I was like, were her eyes white in that scene? And they aren't.
Yeah.
But she is looking directly at everybody whose heads pop.
Interesting.
Okay. So, but yeah, I did think that was something that was kind of weird. I was like, why use that effect at the end? Why not just have her looking at him right from outside the window and smiling and walking away? I think we would have gotten come to the same conclusion if they'd have shown that. I don't know why they went through the effect if they weren't going to have, because they really made a point of showing her face a lot during that courtroom scene, and at no point were her eyes changing or anything. She looked terrified and was looking around everywhere, but literally, like, at one point she's running away from her sister. She turns around and looks at her and her head pops. So I was like, okay, well, they were consistent with that maybe she has to be looking at somebody to do it. But
Yeah. Were you okay? Are you okay with her having these powers?
It would definitely threw me for a loop. I did not see that coming. You know, I thought she was just going to be our AOC stand-in. I did not know she was going to be this important later. And we can do my comic research now. In the comics, yeah, she is a gender swapped character who is the vice president who used to be the CEO of a Vought named Vic Newman. And I think they call him Vic the Veep or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's apparently like a dumbass and just does whatever Vought says type of thing. And so that's what makes me and plus just the way it all rolled down, I was like, she has to be working for Vought because, you know, he's talking about taking down a couple dozen superheroes. Well, who would want that squashed? Vought, you know?
Okay. So wait a minute. So does Mr. Edgar know about her? Because essentially anybody who's a super at this moment is known.
Yeah, I think that he does. I think that they have secret soups out there. I think they have, what do they call it when it's a spy that you like turn them on?
Sleeper agents.
Yeah, I think they got sleeper agents out there. Like maybe she doesn't even know that she did that. Maybe they like... But I think she knows. Yeah. I think she's just playing both sides of the aisle. And I think it's one of those things where it's like, hey, we control the superheroes. And now look at everybody works for Victoria Newman. Huey works for her. Mallory's under her.
Well, and Huey thinks he's getting out of all this.
Yeah. And so he thinks he's getting out of it. And meanwhile, he's working for the, you know, he's working for Vought, essentially, I think, is what I think that Vought's just pulling the strings from every angle. And so they're looking at it as like the person who's going to oversee our soups is under our control. They're like, this is just how we wanted it to go.
Yeah, that's interesting. I thought, you know, in a sense, Huey's story in his mind is over. He's kind of getting a chance to move on, become his own man, and plow his own field. And now he's going to be looped all the way back in.
Once I thought that was out, they pull me back in. So yeah, I think that's a good creative choice where it's like he thinks he's going to work for a senatorial campaign where he, you know, raises some money and makes some phone calls and stuff, and he's going to end up picking up a file somewhere that's got some information on it is like, oh shit, I'm back in it.
I feel like that we're making this way more exciting than it was actually portrayed. Like I'm excited about it because I'm looking a few steps ahead, but if you remember the finale for, and I have to compare and contrast, it's just a fact of life. But the feeling that I got at the end of season one was like, holy fuck. Please, what is going on? How is this going to happen? And I did not have that feeling this time.
Yeah. I felt like it was a very different version, you know, like it.
Yeah. There was something in there. It just didn't have the gravity.
Well, you know, I think that just finding out that Newman was the one popping heads was like, oh, weird. We didn't see that coming, and it wasn't like particularly set up. It wasn't any of the ways I've seen anybody leaning. You know, some people thought it was the lady from the mental hospital. Some people thought it was, Stormfront. And it's just like, it's kind of like it, whereas it was strangely like thrown in there. And it, you know, it's like we saw the Church of the Collective guy get killed. Well, we've seen him for like three episodes. We don't really care about him. So it wasn't as like big a bomb as Butcher finding this person we thought was dead for the last few, you know, for the series. And so, yeah, it wasn't quite as like shocking and like, holy shit, what's going to happen next. But at the same time, I feel like they kind of hit the reset. I heard one podcast mention that it's like they kind of hit the reset button and put it back to where the boys are in the comics, because in the comics they are actually working for like the FBI or something, and they are supposed to be like kind of slapping superheroes on the wrist for when they get out of line. So that's kind of where they've gone with this now. And, you know, so I feel like they've kind of been like, okay, we got to, it was almost like a prequel. Like they got to do 2 years leading up to explaining who all these characters are. And now these last couple seasons are going to be the story itself. Like this, yeah. This was one story and maybe we're leading into another one here. But I just like the fact that it's like, you know, I don't know where it's going to go. I assume that Butcher and MM and Frenchie will all be working for Mallory at some point early in next season. And that, Huey is going to end up working with them because he's going to find something out, or, you know, Starlight is all going to, is also going to be on their side as well. So I feel like there's a lot of places this can go. And now it's all up to, well, what other evil shit is Votman up to? Because, you know, there's more coming down the line.
Yeah. Something interesting that may or may not happen, but let me kind of extrapolate a little bit. One thing that was interesting, if you look at this finale versus something like Endgame, where you have the female-centric scene, if you will. I think we all know what I'm talking about in Endgame, and the girls get it done here. Very different attitudes and actions. And what was interesting is there are a few ladies in the great incomparable blimp that are watching the boys. And I don't know if this will happen, but I fully support, and I think it would be fun to listen to, is a female-centric panelist and doing a kind of girls get it done going over the boys. I don't know if this will happen, folks. You all can put pressure if you'd like to see that and hear that. That is up to you. But I thought it was very interesting the way in which these two things are handled. One was kind of very fluffy and very servicey. And this one was, hey, girls get it done in this particular case is very violent and very heroic at the same time.
Yeah, I loved Frenchie. And the guys kind of just standing there like,
yeah,
what, we can't help. They're just watching them beat the shit out of Stormfront. And it's very satisfying. It's very much like, you know, watching a character you hate die that you're like, oh, finally they're getting their comeuppance.
Yeah. Yep.
And, it was great watching that. And it felt more earned because you go, well, Annie's been, and she was the one that was, you know, coming to think of it, when there was the big superhero showdown at the end of season one, it wasn't a guy saving the day. It was Annie stopping A-Train.
Yep.
And saving Huey. And, you know, it's kind of one of those, it's a lot more earned because they've put the work in where they're like, hey, look at the person helping these guys out is a woman. And so is the other, you know, Kimiko, who is also powered. And yep. the person that helps them out is Maeve, and they've all have correct motivations and they all have reasons to be there. And, you know, I still think the Endgame thing gets a little more shit than it deserves, that I feel like
if he
turned around and it was, and it was all the guys there, nobody would have said anything. But at the same time, they were definitely kind of trying to be like, hey, look at us. We put all the girls in one scene.
Oh,
you know, let's not forget,
Kimiko dies.
Yeah, I that one shocked me for a second. And then
I hated it.
Oh, and then I remembered she died in season one, too. And I was like, oh, yeah, she's Wolverine. She's fine.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. But it definitely surprised the crap out of me because I was like, oh, no. I was like, I just was just getting into Kimiko and learning who she is. And then when I realized, then I was like, oh, wait a minute. Didn't she get stabbed to death by Noir in season one? So I was like, okay. That's another thing we find out. Noir is alive, but they think he's a vegetable, but it's hard to tell.
We'll see him. Yeah. Guaranteed.
Yeah, but no, I thought that was a great scene because I was kind of especially the part of Frenchie and MM and Huey all standing there like, huh, look at they're doing quite the job and there's nothing we could do to help. So we better just sit here and watch.
Yeah. And you would have thought Frenchie had his moment with like, you know, I got something for Stormfront. Well, who else? I don't know yet. You know, he's basically trying to do what he does best and be creatively a fly in the ointment. Mm-hmm.
You know, I one thing I forgot that made me sure that Victoria Newman is working for Vought. Is I didn't understand why Stan Edgar at the press conference was placing the blame on Stormfront for the DC incident if they had no reason to cover it up. Like, why would he worry about covering up if they didn't have anything to do with it?
Interesting.
I mean, it seems like you're either that, or they just like to control every narrative so much that they want to spin it however it's best for Vought. But to me, it seems like maybe they didn't want to be like, still at large. We don't know who did it. I think they're more like, oh, nope, we figured out who did it. We got everything under control. But even that seems like a flimsy reason. It seems like the only reason they would be covering it up is because they're like, yeah, our sleeper agent did it. But we're going to blame it on this third of a person that we've got locked up in a cell somewhere that's muttering German.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I think about that push in where we get zoom in on Homelander's eyes and the audio becomes more and more muffled and distorted. Mm-hmm. And I think we're to infer, you know, Homelander's doing what he does. He puppets and he's going through all the same stuff that he always had been. And there's this something in his head that something doesn't feel quite right, that I'm going through all these motions. And of course he's emasculated and made basically impotent as he's, you know, jerking chicken on the top of a building, which is kind of just an interesting outlook on things.
But well, I guess that's a big thing from the comic, and that they actually filmed that for season one, and it was the one thing that Amazon told them to take out. So obviously they got a little more juice for season two, and they're like, we're putting it in.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, so if they did shoot that for one and then reused it, interesting. But the Kuleshov effect of it all is that he's completely emasculated and is simply just basically Vought's hand at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I thought that was interesting that Maeve figured out the only thing he really cares about. He's being loved, but, you know, for him, his son's love isn't enough. He needs everybody to love him. He has such a hole in his heart, so he has to let his son go, even though it's killing him, because they've got this little bit of leverage over him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's land this ship. We've got some things to do. Excuse me. We've gone 40 minutes and my voice is starting to blow out.
Well, let me throw one last thing out there.
Do it.
So I've realized that the Deep is just going to be a punching bag for five seasons.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm assuming season three, he is going to be shirtless and accepting of his gills.
When I found out we were all just fucking spores, space spores, I didn't laugh.
Yeah. There's so much. Like, I highly recommend that people learn a little bit, watch some Leah Remini, and learn about Scientology, because it's got some great, the way in which they mirror this stuff is just choice.
Yeah, and then the couple things I wanted to drop on people, that if they hadn't seen the news, the showrunner's been out, like, it'd been doing interviews and everything. Some interesting. So I guess Jensen Ackles is playing Soldier Boy next season.
All right. How do I know him?
I don't know. I wrote down his name and I forgot to look at. I recognized his face, but I don't know him from anything specifically. They said Noir is going to return with more backstory.
Okay.
That he said Herogasm is coming. I don't know if you ever read what Herogasm was in the comics.
Absolutely not.
So take the bar scene from season one where they're all drinking and having sex in the air and everything.
Yep.
And then put it on like an island where no cameras are, times it by like 100. I guess that's what it is.
So this guy's like super Epstein.
Yeah. So yeah. He said that Stormfront is not dead. She's still alive. That Kimiko will talk more in season three. Like, you'll understand her more.
Makes sense.
And that Butcher will check in on Ryan from time to time.
Oh, good.
And then I don't know if this one's confirmed or not, but there's a rumor that Jeffrey Dean Morgan's going to be in next season as Tech Knight, which is like a Batman / Iron Man kind of conglomeration.
All right. So I guess if we want to, we can check out the comics in between now and then. Whenever, I'm not going to do it.
Whenever then will be.
Yeah. Who knows? It could easily, we could end up seeing this come 21, maybe even June. Who knows? It would be nice.
Well, I'll be ready. I'll be hitting the books and ready to break it down.
Well, when it comes, you all know where you can find it. We're going to have, we'll do another 8 episodes and we'll do them straight up depending on how Amazon decides to release them. So that'll be a whole nother fun mess. But we're glad you're here. We're glad you stuck with us for these 7 episodes with us. And hopefully you got something out of it. Maybe a little laughter, maybe a little thinking time. Who knows what? With that, Sam Adams, I thank you. You're not just a great man. You're also a great beer. And this is Moe's, and we are signing off.